It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio, your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years. And now, here's JT the Brick.
Yes, and we're out of the gate, JT, as we are coming to you live from the studios of Lotus Broadcasting, Raider Nation Radio. I was at Raiders practice today. It was indoors, and it was the most physical practice that I've seen. I caught a Pete Carroll padded practice indoors where they were really hitting each other, and it was good to see. So what do I mean by that? They were hitting. They were hitting guys and finishing guys off, and some guys went to the ground, and guys were getting hit, which is good. And Pete Carroll's got a plan. And today the plan was, I believe, I didn't talk to him, let's get after it a little bit more. Let's get after it a little bit more and show some physicality. So that was good. You know, when we're there with the media, we get a chance to see drills, individual drills, and I put that all out there if you were able to see it, and some of the other things that we're doing. So it was a nice day today. It was good to get in there and good to see what they're able to do and what they're able to do inside. And I'm impressed. The videos that I put out today and watching guys run routes and Ashton Jeanty and all of that stuff is fun. To see the speed of these players, to see what they're doing out there and how fast and how explosive they are. I was on another show today before I came on this show, and they said, what is the big difference, JT, between this and last year and the year before? I just think it's a little bit sharper. It's a little bit cleaner. Chip Kelly's offense is what's noticeably different, period. It's noticeably different. It looks better, Chip Kelly's offense, looks better than Josh McDaniels' install and offense. And Josh McDaniels came to the Raiders, kind of that was his thing. He's an offensive guy. He's going to put his offense in, and they're going to go to work on his offense. Chip, that was a struggle. His offense struggled because he didn't really have a quarterback. Right? He had who? Who do you have? Jimmy Garoppolo. Aiden O'Connell, when he just came into the league, they didn't have much. And he was let go. And if you look at what Antonio Pierce had with Scott Turner and Norv Turner, they had Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. Aiden's completely different. His body is shaped differently. He looks different. He just looks better. And now Chip Kelly, I think, has been rewarded. I don't know what Chip Kelly would have did with the Josh McDaniels players or the Antonio Pierce players, but it was worth the wait for Chip Kelly to wait and come to the team with Ashton Jeanty and Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers and Jacoby Myers and Geno Smith, because Chip Kelly's got better guys to work with. And that's the focus of the monologue, brought to you by Golden Entertainment. PT's Fuels the Monologue, 5 to 7, midnight to 2, the best happy hour in town. Chip Kelly, in the college ranks at Ohio State and Oregon, had the best of the best players to run his stuff, which was very elaborate. As my old program director would say, very zippy zawa. That was the way he's saying, man, we got something that's just really different and faster, and it looks good. And it does look good with Chip Kelly. He wasn't a bad head coach at Philadelphia either. You know, he didn't go to the Super Bowl, but he's a good coach. Chip Kelly, there's a lot of good coaches that aren't great head coaches, but they're still good coaches. They're good at what they do. They're coordinators who get a chance to be a head coach. They get the job to be a head coach because the team's struggling, so they get an opportunity to be the head coach, and it doesn't work. The whole NFL, since dating back to leather helmets, has dealt with players and coaches who aren't ready for the next level. And they take bad jobs or they don't have good rosters, and they get blown out. I mean, look at Brian Daboll with the Giants. He's the offensive coordinator with Josh Allen. He's doing really good. He gets to become a head coach with the Giants. What he should have done is pass. Should have said, no, you wouldn't have passed. I wouldn't have passed. You want to be a head coach. So he goes to the Giants. The Giants are a train wreck. He's going to get fired this year if they don't make the playoffs. If he would have waited another year in Buffalo, maybe he gets a better job. I don't know. Chip Kelly waited for this opportunity. He had a pretty good job at Ohio State. They won the national championship. And when he got here, a better job than he thought he was going to take because the players are better. And his scheme makes the players look better. And I hope that makes sense. His scheme should make Brock Bowers better. His scheme is definitely making Michael Mayer better. I'm seeing Michael Mayer get a lot of touches. It's just practice, but I like that. Jacoby Myers, I mean, Chip Kelly's got to love having a guy who doesn't drop the football. 1,000 yards, he didn't drop one pass. And then Chip Kelly, a dream in his life is to get Ashton Jeanty, who could be one of those talents that come along that we just haven't seen in quite some time. Now Chip Kelly's in the position to kind of work with Geno, make Geno better in the red zone, which he's got to get better in the red zone, keep up that completion ratio to 70 to 72%, pick up some running first downs instead of some throwing first downs. And Bobby and I talked about that, Bobby. That's the thing I'm going to struggle with the most is I don't like running the football because the last couple of years here, we just ran it into a pile, and I went nuts on that. But Chip Kelly's not going to run the ball in the pile. Of course, there'll be times where they run it up the middle and they don't get any yards. That'll happen, but he won't go back to that. Chip Kelly won't go back to running it up the middle repetitively like this team has done in the past. At least I hope so. And they're going to have a lot of different schemes and motion and all of that. No huddle. Oh, my God. JT the Brick in third person. How much would I like to see opening play of the season, opening drive, no huddle. Just run it. Run the plays that work in Henderson. I saw a lot of plays today that worked in Henderson, right? If you know me, you know that's an inside joke that I'm always saying run the plays that work in Henderson and run them in the game. We didn't do that the last couple of years. We just ran it in the pile. We didn't give the ball to Michael Mayer. We didn't do anything unique. We couldn't block, couldn't run it. Now we got Chip Kelly. And if Chip Kelly doesn't think we can run a play because we're not good at it, he'll either make the play better or give Geno an opportunity to run something different. The other things I saw today, which are getting interesting, is I'm not making a big deal. I'm not a stir-the-pot guy. There's plenty of those out there. But the fact that Jackson Powers Johnson isn't with the ones all the time and Meredith is with the ones and they're switching off is getting interesting. That's getting interesting now. And I think it's fair to say that there's competition with John Spytek, Pete Carroll, and this roster, that there are going to be days where someone is going to play over you to see how they perform compared to you. Ja'Corian Bennett, as me and Vinny Bonsignore were standing together on the sideline, Ja'Corian Bennett is playing with the threes. Oh, boy. What's that all about? You don't need to get him any runs with the threes unless he's going to play with the threes or he's going to be a backup. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. We've got plenty of time. I'm going to be sitting down with John Spytek and Pete Carroll in the production meetings before the preseason games. The stuff that they tell us is private to use on the broadcast, but I'll have a better understanding of the depth chart. So the corners and Jamal Adams, who came over this week when they brought him in, you know, at the end of last week, whenever they brought him over, he's there to play as of now. He's there to prove that he could be a thumper. He could be a guy who can play close to the line of scrimmage. Jeremy Chinn, I think, has a defined role. He's a starting safety. Isaiah Polamalu could be a starting safety, but he's still got to prove himself because Jamal Adams was brought in. Stokes and Darian Porter and Ja'Corian Bennett, they're all trying to perform and compete. So we don't have a player at the cornerback position such as Charles Woodson in his prime or Rod Woodson in his prime or Skip Thomas or the legends like Mike Haynes and Lester Hayes that you go, that's cornerback number one. I haven't seen that yet. I'm pretty confident that Jackson Powers Johnson is going to be the starter, but he is not starting every day and every rep. So that's interesting to see as you continue to see that trend. It's interesting to see, as I'm watching, who they're putting out of there. DeCamrion Richardson or Ja'Corian Bennett. Does DeCam have the edge over Ja'Corian? I don't know. I'm going to interview people on that and ask them going forward here. But we know what the Raiders have now. And with Ashton Jeanty and his ability to run the football, it should take some pressure off of Geno. And I saw that today on a couple of inside handoffs. And they were tackling today. They were getting after it. Max and the crew and the defensive tackles. For what I could see from where I was standing, they were definitely running to the ball and making contact. They weren't cracking people and taking them to the ground, but guys went to the ground today at times in practice, and that's good to see. So the physicality of the team was evident earlier today. We're going to play Pete Carroll and part of his press conference coming up here momentarily for that, because I got to get in the car and come here when he starts talking to everybody. So that's what I like. The thing looks different. When you hear everybody on every show telling you things look different, it's tough for guys like me who interviewed Antonio Pierce every week. But things look different. And I think Antonio Pierce understands that. He wasn't the head coach of Pete Carroll, nor did he ever say he could be. He was just starting as a head coach. Josh McDaniels is not a good head coach. He's had his chances in this league. It didn't work out. I think he's a very dangerous and good offensive coordinator. The Raiders will see him week one. And as I talked about on the sidelines today, there is no doubt in my mind that the New England Patriots, the LA Chargers, and Jaden Daniels and the Commanders in the first 3 weeks are going to attack our secondary. That's what they're going to do. You know it. I just said it. That is, I'm not using the term weakness. Not using the term weakness. But the Raiders' strength is not their secondary yet. And Pete Carroll's working his way through that with Patrick Graham. And it's competition. And it's competition, Pete. It's compete. And there are days that I am just joyful when I see that guys are running with the twos who should be running with the ones, and they're not, because Pete Carroll's having them run with the twos and threes. He's giving people the opportunity to play. That's pretty cool. It's not like, hey, you're out, go play. We're going to just go through the motions. You're our starter. We're going to pencil you in there with the ones every day. Nope, not happening here at Raiders camp. Every day, head on a swivel. So I got there a little bit earlier today, and I showed up in the break room there, kitchen, their cafeteria, and I sat down with a cup of coffee. John Spytek was there with his family, and nice to say hi to him. And I'm just sitting there, sitting at a table, and I'm looking out, and Pete Carroll shooting jump shots. So they got a basketball hoop right there off the practice field, right there. And Pete Carroll's chucking up these, you know, 10-footers. Swish, swish. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. I'm not going to video it. Not my right. That's not an open moment to video any. I'm just watching. And someone's feeding him the ball. And he's just knocking down threes. So he puts the basketball down and he runs out there. He puts his gloves on and he's throwing warm-up passes like he's the next Tom Brady. Just throwing, getting loose. The guy he's throwing with's getting moving far to the back. And then the players come out and he's just running. Running all around the place. Just dapping everybody up. It's crazy to see it. It's really remarkable. It's really fun to see what he's doing. And then all the coaches run out there and they do the same thing. So everybody's getting a chance. If you're watching on our YouTube channel, please subscribe. We need people to subscribe to YouTube. What we're seeing is a time in Raider history where there's a new regime. Everybody's sitting around and everybody buys into this because they're seeing it. And I'd be the first to be critical of me. I buy in every year because you buy in every year because it's July and it's supposed to be better. And when I don't see it better, we tell you about it. We know by week one or two if it's not better or not. But this one's a little bit different. If the Raiders lose a game, God forbid, or if they lose an early game, I think the Raider Nation is going to say, no, this is a good plan. This is a solid foundation on how to win football. I don't know how many games they're going to win, but they are clearly coached at a level where the defense is going to benefit from the offense picking up more first downs. And that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. I want to see the offense win the time of possession battle because Ashton Jeanty, Raheem Mostert, who I guess his wife just had a baby, and Sincere McCormick. Oh, and a lot of people asked me what I meant about Zeus, Zamir White today. I was with Harry Ruiz. He went right by me. I said, how much weight did he lose? Last year, like Ashton Jeanty looks really bulked up. Like he looks like a weightlifter. His biceps are insane. Looks like that Fantastic Four Hulk guy. Well, Zamir White looked similar to that last year. He does not look like that now. Someone told him to lean up because whatever he did last year didn't work. It was a combination of the play calling, the offensive line. They were dead last. Whatever he's doing, Zamir White looks different. And every year, people look different. I'd say, from my eye, the three guys who look the most different to me in a good way are Aiden O'Connell. Aiden O'Connell looks leaner, looks more athletic. He just looks like he's developed into a different-looking guy. Number two is Colt Miller. Colt Miller just looks really lean, like a boxer getting ready for a fight and leaning down but still big. And then Zamir White looks noticeably different to me. He looks like he leaned down a bit. I don't know what his weight is and all that. But with all these guys, they just look super fit. Pete Carroll told them to go get and stay super fit when they came back and got the install and what they were going to be able to do. So I like what they're doing here. A lot of people are peppering me on Christian Wilkins about the kiss and where the kiss was. I have no interest in that topic. I work for the Raiders. I'm not a gossip promoter. This will all come out. Whatever Christian Wilkins did, whoever he did it to, I promise it'll all come out. It will not come out through me. A lot of people are guessing now. A lot of people want clicks. A lot of people want to take what someone else says and then quote tweet it so they can get more likes. You know, everybody's in that business. I'm in it too, but different. So what Christian Wilkins did with his rehab or how he behaved in front of his teammates is being investigated. And a lot of people around the league, because it's a slow time of year, that is still a trending story. I got nothing for you. The only thing I told you that it's fluid, he's gone. If he did anything that was rude or crossed the line, it will come out because everything comes out. Normally everything comes out. And it's none of my business. And he's out and he's off the team. Now, none of us were aware of this, including the big boys, Jay Glazer, Adam Schefter. I mean, you're really busting Vinny's blank and other people's blank for not knowing this? I mean, come on. The big boys who cover national NFL, Peter Schrager at ESPN, no one had this a week ago, that Christian Wilkins could have been acting weird or different. No one had that. And I'm not sitting around asking people about the specifics of that, because that's not my lane. And there are newsbreakers that will break that. And we'll see what happens there. But he's off the team. No one seems to care anymore. He's gone. That's a real big takeaway. Nobody cares that he's gone. I'm not saying he was a terrible teammate or a great teammate. That's all going to come out. Am I looking to hide information? No, I'm always honest with you. I don't have any information. I don't know the way he behaves in the locker room and his personal life. No idea. But I really wanted him to work well because I think he's a great player and could still be a great player if he heals correctly. He wasn't rehabbing to the level of what the Raiders might have envisioned by not having another surgery if recommended or acting a certain way. And if he was acting a certain way while he was not available to play, tell that to my sons. I got two hardworking sons just getting into the workplace. I go, you don't behave badly in front of anybody, number one, and in front of your work employees. You act a certain way at work, and you treat people the certain way. You know, football can get interesting. You know, some people are just a little bit out there. You know, Raiders had some guys in the 70s and 80s. They were out there. They liked to drink a lot of cold beer. They liked to go out after practice and get after it. All in good fun. Don't know what happened here. Wheels up to Canton on Thursday. Excited about that. That's going to be a lot of fun. We're putting some programming together for Friday on Eric Allen. All right, let's get to a little Pete Carroll. This is Pete Carroll a little while ago. As he spoke, practice was indoors today, and Pete Carroll met the media.
Pete, we've noticed a little rotation going on at center with Jackson and Jordan Meredith. Hey, what has Jordan Meredith shown you guys since you guys have been here, and how do you feel that job is shaping up?
Well, first off, it just goes right to the heart of everything. It's always competing. These guys are battling for their playing time, and they're battling. It's a good battle. You asked about Jordan specifically. He's done well. He played really efficiently last year. His numbers and his consistency really showed up, even though he didn't seem right as a regular all the time. So, you know, he just opened our eyes in the offseason studies, and so we're just giving him a shot. JPJ's working his tail off, and both those guys are battling, you know, so it just makes us better. And they're not the only two. There's battles across the board, but that's one that, you know, that jumps out at you.
Speaking with those battles, could you please talk about Sincere and Zamir and their battling?
Yeah, I'm really happy with the running back group. It's the variety of the styles of the guys. I love that we have different kind of makeups of guys. Zamir kind of stands alone. He's biggest, strongest of the group, and he really runs tough. It's all over the film from his past. He's running at guys. He's attacking downhill, and I love that he brings that to us. Sincere, who didn't get a lot of playtime last year, did really well when he did, and he's shown he's got a real knack. He's got really, really good quick feet that are real natural to the position, and he makes guys miss, you know. And so, I mean, right now it's just keep giving them the ball, and we'll just keep logging plays and reps, and we'll figure it out. But we're real happy with the spot. I also, just to say something about Ashton, he's had a couple great days now. He's done a little bit of everything. Ran tough, caught the ball well, looked elusive and fast and explosive. So it just makes the position group really exciting. And we don't have Raheem here. They're having baby right now, and so we're giving him all that freedom to do that well. But he's been in it too, so it's a good group.
On the other side of the ball, can you talk a little bit about what you've seen, the energy from Jonah Laulu, and just him trying, you know, not even trying, he's fitting right in.
I've said this a couple times to you guys that, you know, Jonah had really flashed last year when he played, and didn't play consistently, didn't get in all the time, you know, didn't log a ton of plays, but he shows all of the traits. You know, he's really long, plays really aggressive, he's really good technique-wise, he's a little bit quicker than you might think for a big guy, and he uses it well. His resolve about coming from the offseason all the way through to camp is really clear. He's really on it. He's playing day after day after day. He's doing things right, and he's playing really hard, and he's really tuned in. He's playing tough. So he's making a great pitch for, you know, he needs to be out there a lot. So it's good.
Pete, talking about the DBs, JT Woods and DeCameron Richardson seem to be ascending in a lot of ways. What about those two players?
Okay, they're ascending. Yeah, well, JT came to us late, so we're just getting started with him. DeCam he's been doing a really nice job. He's had some really competitive plays. He's won some one-on-ones just in the first couple of days of pads here, and I've got high hopes for JT. He looks just right. He's really fast. He's really coordinated, can catch the ball well and all of that. He listens, and he's comfortable with what we're asking, the style of play. He's suitable. You know, he looks pretty typical, I would guess, for us, for our kinds of guys. So he's going to get a heck of a chance to see what he can do and how he can contribute. So it's good positives to start with.
We talking about competition today.
Go ahead.
Pete, we saw Devin with the interception today. Can you talk a little bit about your confidence in the group of linebackers in general?
Yeah, this is a good group for us now. We have totally changed this position group, you know, from what you've seen in the past. And these guys all bring background and experience and toughness and a hard-nosed attitude, physicality to them. It's pretty exciting, and to see that the effect they're having on the younger guys and kind of shifting their intensity and how they're playing and coming downhill. Johnny Glenn's got some decisions coming up here. It's going to be a really competitive group throughout, and we can play six guys right now. They can all play, and they can get in there. So that's a good problem. It's a tough problem to deal with, but we'll figure it out. You know, we haven't talked maybe a lot about Pratt and Jermaine, but he brings a real toughness, and he has had a really diverse background and playing different spots and all. Very comfortable moving them around. And we're seeing that also out of Devin. You know, Devin has a great playmate today now. But he had probably two or three of the best plays on practice yesterday as well. He's back. You know, he was on top of the world a few years ago, and then things kind of just didn't work out one reason or another, and he's back in action now, and he came up to me and said, I'm all in now, and he was dead serious in how he said it, you know, and you can see it, and so with E-Rob kind of leading the charge, it's a really fun group.
Alex Bachman's a kid that just keeps making plays, just keeps showing up. Would you talk about him, please?
Yeah, I'm not ignoring that. He has been doing it throughout the offseason, and he's come to camp with the playmaking. It's happening. You know, he's getting in the right spots. He's got really good quickness. He's fast. He's a fast kid. He's got a lot of experience in his background. He just hasn't played very much. I'm not holding that against him. Man, he's in the midst of all this stuff, and I see it too. I see him. He's making plays every. And we can count on him. And so it's a great sign. He's doing well in special teams, too.
As you try to build a culture of this organization, this team, on a daily basis, what are you seeing in the process And what little things do you try to do each day to get to where you want it to be?
There's so much, really. There's so much that we're doing from a day-to-day basis, going back to, you know, the messages that we started with and setting the expectations and the guidelines for how this is supposed to feel. And when it is the feel part of what culture is really about, when you sense where you're supposed to be, how it's supposed to go, how we respond, what's expected. And when the players embrace that, and they add their own little this's and that's to it, now we're moving. We're moving in a good direction now. I can feel it. This is how it's supposed to feel according to what I've experienced. And maybe even with stronger leadership early on, you know, the direction of this team, it's unknown right now. We don't know. I mean, I couldn't tell you anything what's going to happen. But I do know they're going to be together, and I do know they're going to play for one another, and they're going to feel that connection that is so important to the culture and the effect of the culture on the performance. And it really, it's about how we play, but it's the mentality that drives them to study and to work and to give it up for one another and to make the plays toughness wise because they have to, because we're counting on them, you know. And that's all about this whole thing. So I mean, there's so many aspects to it. It's ongoing, moment to moment, you know, situation to situation, and I'm just trying to be right in the middle of all of it and keep giving them a format that they can embrace and they can take to where we're capable of going.
You mentioned the curiosity level of when you get the pads on, seeing how guys respond. About Jack Besh yesterday.
Yeah,
that's really responded, but also Dante Thornton when the pads came on in his.
Yeah, it's a good acknowledgement, really, because Jack really played well yesterday. And you know, sometimes coaches have been saying that, you guys hear it, you know, oh, you got to wait to put the pads on and see what he looks like. Well, Jack looked really good yesterday. He blocked well. He caught the ball in traffic. He made some tough catches. He was hustling like crazy, you know, and he showed up. He was all over the place, you know. So I think it was obvious. He's one of those guys. You know, he's got the feel. He's got the sense. He can play the game, and that was really good to see. Dante continues to do stuff. He's making plays. He got deep yesterday. You guys saw that one. A huge play by Gino to find him late down, you know, down the corner. But he came through, made the catch. He's made tough catches over the middle. He's caught the slant routes where he's getting banged around and all that. And he's comfortable with it. I just stopped him after practice just to look him in the eye and just try to get a feeling. Is it seeming too big for him? You know, he's right in it. So I'm really excited about his chance to help us.
As much as you love competition, everyone knows about Bowers and Mayer, but man, you Kadir and Runyon and Thomas, your tight end room is really deep. Would you talk about that group, please?
Yeah, we shouldn't overlook Ian though. Ian is a good football player. He's been a starter a lot of places, and he's played really good ball. And he's in great shape. He's fast. He's tough. He's got the experience that shows up. He makes good decisions at the right time. It's a really good group, and the young guys are flashing. You know, they're flashing. So it's a very strong spot for us.
All right, and some of people went on to talk about another 4 or 5 minutes. What I find really unique is that when Vinny's asking him questions and everybody, like the Jack Besh answer, he knew exactly what to say. He had a good day in practice yesterday and was specific about it. What Pete Carroll does that's differently, everyone, is he's so hands-on with the film and the practice and the competition with his assistants and his coaches that when they talk about it and have a review, they know who played well. Like, it for me, I come on here and I say, Jack Besh looked well. Oh, it's just my opinion. Pete Carroll knows if he played well or not. He's the coach. He could tell you. So he's very positive. You're not hearing him talk down about anybody, not saying, well, he's got to get better yet. It's early in camp. But how about that, about Jack Besh putting the pads on and Dante Thornton and how they were able to play to the level of Pete Carroll? And then the running back room is going to be really interesting. Sincere McCormick, Zeus, Raheem Mostert's away, having a child, his wife is, and then we know this is Ashton's team. He's the leading running back. And how everybody else is going to fit in. And they asked about the competition of the offensive line, Meredith versus Jackson Powers Johnson. I'm a Jackson Powers Johnson guy. I think he wins that job. I think he's the choice. We got to start his career at center and leave him alone. No, they're going to make him compete every day. In their days, he's playing with the twos. And I don't think he's going to be offended by that. Might motivate him to even play better. Isn't that what this is all about? So we appreciate that. Monologue brought to you by Boyd Gaming. 10 properties here through Boyd in the Valley. Locals, locals, locals. You know, a lot of people are talking to me all the time about what's happening in Vegas. There's a lot of gouging. There's a lot of this. It's too expensive. What's going on? Not with Boyd Gaming. Boyd knows exactly what you locals want in town. And if you're coming from out of town, head on out to a Boyd Gaming property because they've been here for so long, the legacy of Mr. Boyd and how they treat their customers right. Boyd Gaming, proud partner of Raider Nation Radio. So I'm going to be moving some people around today. Mike North, one of my favorite sports talk hosts ever, on the passing of Ryan Sandberg. Wow, that's a big one. 65 years old, the Hall of Famer passed away. I know there's some Cub fans out there. If you have a call for him today, today would be the day to do it. Jeff Sherman joins us from the Westgate as we take a look at the moving odds. So we got a busy show, and Brock Bowers is our draft guy today.
Ritter gets the snap. He's looking left. He's pressured. He escapes out to the right, keeping the play alive to the end zone, looking for Bowers. Caught it! Touchdown, Brock Bowers! Over the outstretched arms of Von Bell, it's a 22-yard touchdown. Ritter with a beautiful touch pass to the front of the end zone, and Brock Bowers has his second touchdown grab of the year.
JT, back with you as we continue on. As we look at our players' most influential draft picks. So we have the open for that as we get going. Yeah, that's what I thought we were going to do. Let's get to Brock Bowers as we feature that today.
Over the next few weeks of summer, JT will look back at the most influential Raiders draft picks in the history of this storied franchise.
With the 13th pick, the Las Vegas Raiders select
the players only drafted by the Raiders who played in the most important games and also had lasting impacts on the NFL.
All right, we wanted to do Brock today because you can include Brock into your phone call. Brock Bowers, born December 13th. 2002. Brock Bowers, born in 2002. Napa, California. I posted today a memory 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I anchored the Raiders training camp coverage today. 10 years ago to the day in Napa. Brock Bowers was 12 years old. Went to Georgia, was drafted in the first round, the 13th pick overall, and he's already a first-team All-Pro. It's too early in his career. I'm not going to go and read his bio, but I wanted to mention him as one of the most influential all-time Raider draft picks. We put him in. We had to get him in here. He's one of the only guys I do this with because he's had that big of an impact. The only other player that I remember having an impact at this level was Darrell Russell. May he rest in peace. When Darrell Russell came in his first 2 years, back-to-back Pro Bowl years, he was an impact defensive tackle. Man, he was a good defensive tackle, Darrell Russell. Brock hit the ground running. He had an amazing year. He had one of the best years in NFL history. He just dominated everything that we expected him to do. So we want to see more of Brock. As his college numbers, he's a two-time Mackey Award winner, two-time national champ. So that puts him up there. And then last year, in the games that he played, he started 16 of 17 games, 112 receiving yards, 1,194 yards, 5 touchdowns overall. The touchdowns have to go up, period. They got to get him the ball in the red zone more. Problem with that is he will be doubled. He will be doubled in the red zone under Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly will put him in motion more, and Michael Mayer, some 12 personnel. I think that they're going to really try to stress getting Brock. The touches are great. 112 receptions, beautiful. And I expect the same. You know, I don't know if it's less, if it's 105. But if you can go from 5 touchdowns to 11 or 12, I think that'll be the good progression because I believe the Raiders will have more touches in the red zone with Geno. So we just wanted to get Brock in there today. I wanted to young it up. You know, I'm putting in some of the older guys and the phones don't ring. And I'm like, oh, God. Aren't we doing something right here? Please tell me I'm doing something right. And no one wants to call in on the old guys. And I'm like, all right, let's do it in young guy today. So if you have a something you want to say about Brock, today's a good day to do it. I think all time in Raider history, he's an influential draft pick. How lucky he is to be here. Well, he could have went anywhere. Can you imagine passing on Brock Bowers with the first 12 picks? The Jets, the teams that passed on Brock Bowers. Are you kidding me? He fell to the Raiders. Fell right to the Raiders perfectly. And now the Raiders have a player who could be a generational talent, along with Ashton Jeanty. I know I talk about Brock a lot because I back it up. We have to find players like him and more. And Tom Telesco drafted him. It's a good pick. Give him credit for that. Was it a no-brainer? Yeah, at 13, it was a no-brainer. I watched Rich Gannon, I tell this story in real time, at Omnia Nightclub while the pick was coming, and Rich Gannon saw it. He's like, they're going to take Bowers. Everyone's like, wait, they already have Mayer. Who cares? They got two now. They got two tight ends. And the shock on some people's faces when he was drafted, like, how dare you take another tight end? He's the best player available. Best player available. Ashton Jeanty, best player available at number six. So in back-to-back years, we get Brock Bowers and Ashton Jeanty. You would hope that puts the Raiders on the right track. 702-365-9200. I'm going to spend time talking about Ryan Sandberg. Also coming up next, Jeff Sherman over at the Westgate on the Moving Lines. Thank God I have a show in Chicago that's live and not Vegas. Bob's in Chicago. He's calling in first. Hello, Bob.
Hey, JT. Great to talk with you.
Thank you.
It's coming out for the Bear, I should say the Raider Bear game, not the Bear Raider. I'm looking forward to it, but I want to.
Hey, Bob, we want Raider fans out here for the game. We don't want Bears fans. I mean, you're gonna take
one.
I'm a Raider
fan.
You're a Raider fan.
I'm a diehard Raider fan going back to 1960.
Okay, good. Back to the days of our late friend Raider Mort. So good. I didn't know about that. So you're a Raider fan. You're going to protect the house. You're coming for the Bears game in your Raider gear. Love it, Bob. Love that.
Exactly. But talking about draft picks, Tim Brown, that's what he reminds me of. Class act all the way.
Yeah, class act, really solid on that. And Tim Brown, I can promise you, will make our top 10. As we go to our top 10 Raider most influential draft picks, Tim Brown will be in our top 10. Good to hear you. When he said he was from Chicago, he's coming out to the Raider game. I'm like, come on. We don't need a Bears fan out here. Bears are coming. Cleveland's coming. A lot of people are coming this year for Raider games. Dallas is coming. Chargers will have a couple of more bandwagon fans maybe try to come. Season tickets showed up yesterday, big book. It looked like a book you'd have in the library with the season tickets, and they featured the quarterbacks. Remember, for those who are freaking out that Derek Carr wasn't in there, Derek Carr wasn't retired when this went to print. So calm down. We didn't disrespect Derek Carr. This was about Derek Carr still in the league. They weren't doing current players in the league. Understand that wasn't a personal slight against Derek Carr. Okay, when they went to print this thing, they don't put this together at Kinko's 3 weeks ago. This takes a lot of time to do it, and the Raiders put out another really nice addition if you're a season ticket holder. Jeff Sherman, VP of Risk Management over at the Westgate, one of our gambling segments coming up next.
Well, we're a little bit of the Niners. We like the Niners a little bit, but the Raiders did their training camp in Napa. So I used to at my middle school. Actually, that was my middle school where they went. So it's pretty cool. It all comes full circle like that.
Full circle for Brock Bowers, middle school at Napa, and now a Raider. He's our featured most influential draft pick of the day. JT, back with you. You heard Steph say the DiCastroverde Law Group, if you get into an accident, the brothers win. Brotherswin.com as we bring in Jeff Sherman, VP of Risk Management, over at the Westgate. So we'll begin with the World Series odds because I watched a great game between the Padres and the Mets last night. The Dodgers have not played well, and my Yankees, the floor has fallen out from them. What are the big significant changes over the last week, Jeff?
Well, just like you mentioned, we have been bumping up the Dodgers. They're up to 5-2, which is a high point for the season for us. The Yankees are up to 12-1, and they'd been in single digits for most of the year. So now Toronto has surpassed them in single digits at 9-1. And if you look at the AL East with that change, Toronto a $3 favorite, Yankees plus 280. So we've seen a flip in the odds with those two teams.
What have you seen with the Padres and the Mets and Philadelphia? I want to talk about the teams that aren't the Dodgers and where the liability is or where the sharp money's been coming in, because I don't think the Padres have had a great year. Philly has been up and down. The Brewers had an amazing hot streak there. As I told you before, I think a National League team is the only team that can take out the Dodgers, not an American League team.
Yeah, like you said, we've seen movement on the Brewers down to 12-1. Yeah. We have liability on the Mets sitting at 10-1.
Okay.
Now the Padres are up to 25-1, so not too much support for them lately.
Very interesting to me when I look at this too. Do you? I know your team is great. This trade deadline stuff, as buyers and sellers are coming in, does that move the market much at all? Unless it's a blockbuster deal, and there aren't many of them out there. You pick up a third baseman, a utility second baseman. Not much changes, right?
It can, because it's all based on perception. So if Eugenio Suarez ends up getting traded somewhere, then that will affect the odds, just because people will be looking to buy onto that team. So if you get a name like that, it surely can do it. And, you know, we'll be paying attention to it. The one thing to watch Thursday, the trade deadline, I believe there's only three games. So you're not going to see too many game lines affected by players in and out of the lineup.
Jeff Sherman, VP of Risk Management, going over to the Westgate, the sharpest book in town. So this new trimmed-down Luka Doncic, he looks amazing, and we knew he would because he's getting heat for not being in shape when he came over to the Lakers. The body change is remarkable on the cover of Men's Health, and we've been able to see that, and it's trending now. How has that moved the MVP movement with the trimmed-down Luka?
Yeah, you know, that came out in the media just yesterday, and now we've seen Luka was sitting at 7-1 for MVP. We actually took a decent size wager on him at that, and now he's dropped to 4-1. So you're seeing five, even less than that. We're at 4 for MVP, so we're bumping other players up. Not much on Giannis, Anthony Edwards, Wemby. So it's all Luka right now with what we've seen the past couple days.
Where do you have SGA coming off the MVP?
I was at 11-4. Now he's down to 9-4. So we took some support for him to be a repeat winner of that award. So we haven't seen too much on Jokic yet. And, you know, we'll have to see if he can repeat what he did last year, because I thought he was a rightful winner last year based on his stats.
Jeff Sherman is our guest. So NFL preseason, I'll be in Canton on Thursday. Chargers, Lions. Tell everyone on the gaming process in the preseason, the limits, what type of handle you usually have on that Thursday night game?
You know, this one we'll have. It's great to see a July football game going on. So that game is picked with a total of 33, and this one will get more handle than usual just because it's by itself. You know, we generally take 2,000 on a side, 1,000 on a total, so much lower limits than you'd see during the regular season, obviously. And you're going to see a lot of movement in these lines, information-based. For instance, it looks like J.J. McCarthy will be playing the first week of preseason and sitting out the last two, which is usually opposite of what we see. So I would expect to see a high line on the Vikings next week when those lines come out.
All right, I was just looking online at NFL Futures. Tell us where you're at here between Baltimore and Buffalo on odds to win the Super Bowl.
We have the Bills at 6-1, the Ravens at 7-1, and the Bills are seeing a lot of support in every market that we have up. And two outsider teams that we're seeing a lot of traction for are the Vikings at 25 and Denver down to 30-1. Those have been two very popular teams.
Yeah, I've been noticing Denver. There's a lot of hype on Denver, not only in the AFC, but in the Super Bowl odds there. I don't see it, but then again, I'm a bit biased on that. What about the Chiefs? Are the Chiefs more under the radar than you recall over the Mahomes era?
Yeah, they're up to 7-1, which is higher than you usually see during the times of Mahomes. And their season win total at 11.5 is seeing under support from the sharp players. So, you know, a lot of people believing what we saw in the Super Bowl is going to translate to this season.
Lastly, I want to ask about the Cowboys and their future odds here, because fans just love to go up to the window and throw a 50 or 100 spot on the Cowboys every year.
Yeah, sitting at 40-1 right now, and they have been popular. But they've been dealing with some injury issues, too, so it subsided the last couple weeks with that. especially Micah Parsons' contract situation. So until those things get resolved, it's been slowing down on Dallas' support.
And it looks like Caitlin Clark, because of the injuries, will not win the MVP. The Bucks have got to be happy about that.
Yeah, she's out to 150-1 now. Wow. And just hasn't played enough games. And Nafisa Collier is a $14 favorite, so likely for her to come away with that award.
How short were the odds on Caitlin Clark when the season started, ballpark?
She was 5-2 when I opened them up. And Asia Wilson was actually the favorite ahead of her. You could have found Nafisa Collier 6-7-1, and she's had by far the best season.
Jeff, enjoy some time off. We look forward to talking to you when the preseason wraps up.
Okay, thanks, JT.
Jeff Sherman over at the Westgate. Good gambling segment. As he's there, he's one of the sharpest minds we have in Vegas. Didn't have enough time to get to golf with him. A UNLV golfer just won this last week, which is really cool that a UNLV golfer won. We're excited about that because we support UNLV. I was talking to the legendary golfer, Texan Jeremy Anderson, on that, and what a great college golfer he is, one of the best, and a great friend to our show here. And we are just excited that when you see a UNLV golfer get it done and winning the 3M, nice storyline here. Kurt Kitayama fired a final round 65 to win the 3M Open by a stroke. That hour went fast. And we have the best. Mike North is going to join us, and Mike Jones from The Athletic, an NFL insider, is going to join us in a few minutes here. I always tell you about Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers, one love, proud partner. You know they make that cane sauce in-store every day. Sometimes I open up my refrigerator, and there's a whole bunch of cane sauce, and my kids are using it on other foods because they love the sauce, the crinkle-cut fries, the buttery Texas toast, the lemonade, the iced tea. But the Chicken Fingers, proud partner of our show, as training camp is underway. I was out there today, indoors. And I don't pay attention a lot, man. I get up in the morning. I walk the dog, swim, get in the car from Summerlin to deep Henderson. The cones are out again, Bobby. Cones everywhere. We have cones here on Flamingo. Every 3 to 4 years, they decide to repave Flamingo near Durango. So our orange friends are out, the cones. Get ready. Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers. One love.